I'm going to present, and I'll mention a few of the motivations, but just to get things started, let me put down a question. The question that's on the background of everything is about deforming Fourier-Mukai dualities. So how can we deform Fourier-Mukai duality? And let me just remind you that two complex projective varieties, I'm going to start with projective ones, are called Fourier-Mukai partners. If we can find an object in the derived category of the product, so that the integral transform that this object defines is an equivalence. So this is the usual definition, starting with a complex on X. You pull back and you push forward. And you twist by the object in between. So we want this to be an equivalence. And all my pullbacks, push forwards are derived. So if we can find such a gadget, then we say that X and Y are Fourier-Mukai partners. And what I would like to look at is some interesting ways for producing such pairs. And why one way that one might imagine is to start with a situation where we do have a Fourier-Mukai equivalence and try to deform it in some direction. So a version of the question, which is slightly more precise, even though not by much, is given a Fourier-Mukai equivalence say phi from the derived category of a variety X to the derived category of a variety Y, when can phi be deformed along with some deformation of X? So say that I start deforming X only in some way and move along with X the derived category of coherent sheaves. And then I started with some equivalence. Can I understand, can I find some deformation of this category together with a functor from the deformed X, the category of the deformed X to the deformed category here, so that it's still an equivalence? Yeah. So I want so given deformation of x, deformation, let's call it x sub t of x, in some direction, can we find a new category dt, which at zero specializes to the derived category of y, and a functor phi sub t from dbx t to dt, which is still an equivalence. Of course, you know, to pose this question rigorously, you have to get into the deformation theory of triangulated or DG categories, and I don't want to do that. But this is somehow a motivating question. The advantage of posing this question is that once you pose it on the categorical level, you can consider all sorts of deformations of x. In particular, you can consider deformations of x in non-geometric directions. You can consider non-commutative deformations of x, or you can consider deformations of x as a stack. Well, I don't know if there is a space. But what I do require is that dt specializes at zero to the derived category of y. Sorry? Yeah, no, let me, because maybe this is a little bit confusing, let me just point out one thing, that this is a very hard question because it implies the Hodge conjecture, the variation of Hodge conjecture. No, but I also want the functor to deform. If the functor wasn't an identity functor to begin with, it's not just that I want continuous deformation of this category abstractly. I want this functor to deform as well. Right, I really want the equivalence to deform. And let me point out that, in fact, you can, but it doesn't help you. Yeah, in fact, so what I mean, you'll see. What I'm going to give you is going to give you an instance of this happening, which is interesting and not completely straightforward. So I just want to point out that there is one peculiar thing in this situation, which is if you look at all the deformations of x, and if you accept this philosophy that the deformations of x, the most general deformations of x, should be the deformations of the derived category of coherent sheaves as a triangulated category, then you have this preferred family of deformations, or if you do it on the DG category, it's in fact all the infinitesimal deformations, which is captured by the infinitesimal is captured by the second Hochschild cohomology of X. And if you start it with an equivalence, you get an isomorphism of the Hochschild cohomology of X and the Hochschild cohomology of Y because they're invariants of the triangulated categories. So in particular, if you have chosen a deformation direction for X, you get for free, by the equivalence, a deformation direction for y. And in fact, if you do the analysis for deformations of triangulated category, it's not very hard to check that if the deformation of x that we started with, the infinitesimal deformation of the category dbx that we started with, was unobstructed, the one here will be unobstructed because, again, this is captured by the product structure on the Hochschild homology. So a priori, there is no obstruction to, if you start with a deformation of this category that's not unobstructed, you get for free a deformation of this category that's unobstructed. There is no obstruction here. But there is an obstruction for deforming the functor, because, which hasn't been calculated, and in general, it will be very interesting to calculate. And it's fairly easy to see that there is an obstruction for deforming the functor if you just look at an object that represents the functor to begin with and look at its chunk classes, you can easily concoct deformations of of this category in which this chunk class is ceases to be of Hodge type. So if you expect some representability for this functor to come from an object, then you hit some Hodge type obstruction for the deformability of the functor. So it is an honest question. And let me say, so the basic example, of course, for Fourier Mackay duality is Mackay's original duality, where you start with X, which is an abelian variety, and you work at the dual abelian variety. And which is just the algebraically trivial line bundles on X. And you take K to be the Poincaré bundle, which is the universal bundle for this moduli problem. Then Mackay proved that the integral transform for this object is an equivalence. And it's very, in fact, it is in some implicit form contained in the original Mackay paper. It's easy to check that if you deform X as an abelian variety, or even as a complex torus, then X dual deforms as the dual complex torus, and the equivalence deforms as, again, the Fourier Mackay equivalence for the deformed pair of dual tori. So if we deform X as a complex torus, then DB from complex torus XT, then DBX dual and the Fourier Mackay equivalence with respect to the Poincaré shift deform as just the derived category of the dual complex torus to XT and the corresponding Fourier Mackay functor for the Poincaré shift. So you see that if you start with deformations of X in this most canonical example, you end up with deformations on the other side, and the deformation of the equivalence is unobstructed. And of course, you can view this as some algebraic incarnation of T-duality. And they are non-algebraic versions of that are really the T-duality in physics. Okay, but as I said, complex tori have interesting deformations that are not captured by the deformations of the complex structure. Extra deformations. Because the second Hochschild cohomology of a complex torus, after you decompose it, has three pieces which are all non-trivial. And so at least infinitesimally, you expect to see not only the complex structure deformations which are captured by this piece, but also deformations as a non-commutative space, which are captured by the holomorphic Poisson structures that live here, and deformations that are captured by this direction. And the most natural way to interpret those is to say that we're deforming X as an all-star gerb. So this is the tangent space to the space of all-star gerbs on X. So these are non-commutative deformations. These are geometric deformations. And these are gerby deformations. And the good thing about the complex torus is that they're all there. They're all non-trivial. Um, another good thing is that if you look at the ordinary Fourier Mukai duality, which exchanges, which identifies the derived category of X with the derived category of X dual, you see what this duality does on Hochschild-Kuh homology, you immediately see that it switches these two pieces and preserves this one. So Fourier Mukai on the level of HH2 switches H0, I don't know, maybe you can't see this one, switches the two end pieces. And preserves the middle piece. So preserving the middle piece is exactly the statement that says that there is no obstruction to deform the Fourier Mukai functor into a geometric direction. But then, if you try to deform your torus into the non-commutative direction, then you expect that the Fourier Mukai functor will deform, but will exchange, will trade off this non-commutative torus with a Jerby torus. Is what canonical? You mean in this case it's canonical, yes, because it's a torus. In general, it's only a filtration, right? And now you're posed with an interesting question to understand what this deformed equivalence would mean geometrically if it's there, and fine. But before I get into that, let me just mention a variant of this business, which is entirely commutative, but it's still interesting, and in fact appeared at the end of Marco's lecture today, when he had a T duality that traded some topological information for some flux, for some jerk information. So a variant of this situation is when you don't work with a single abelian variety, but you work with a family of tori. So look at a family X over some base S of tori, and I would really want those to be groups, so I need to have a section, which is homomorphic or algebraic, depending on what situation we are in. And again, here we have a relative dual family, which is the relative line bundles, which are algebraically trivial. And it's again a vibration over the same base. So this is exactly fiber-wise T duality. And it comes with a section. And there is a Poincaré sheaf that lives on the fiber product of the two dual families, which again, Mukai, when these are really tori, smooth families of tori, Mukai proved in his original paper that it induces an equivalence of derived categories. So again, and you can allow the generations, but then the equivalence statement is trickier. It has been proven in many cases, but I'm not going to talk about degenerating families. So Poincaré and phi p is an equivalence. Okay, so there is this setup, which is exactly the same as the setup we had before when S was a point. But now something interesting happened It turns out the geometric deformations of X are traded off for non-geometric ones if you try to deform the equivalence. So it is no longer true in this case. That every geometric deformation, xt of x, leads to a geometric dual object. And the reason is that in order to form the geometric dual object, of course, you can always look at the relative algebraically trivial line bundles along the fibers, but there will be many different families that have the same dual space. And it's unrealistic, and in fact, it's very easy to concoct examples in which you cannot hope to have two different spaces to have the same dual space and the same equivalence. So the thing that's defective here in this setup is the problem that when you start deforming X, even if you deform it as a family over S, the section that we had here may disappear. So this is really a change in the global geometry of your family. And in fact, if we deform X to a space, let's call it Y, which is a principal bundle over X. Well, X is a family of groups, so I can look at principal homogeneous spaces over X. And there are Ys, analytic varieties Ys, that are deformations of X like that. So X acts simply transitively along the fibers. Then you can do this analysis of what happens on the level of the Hochschild cohomology with such a deformation, and you see that this deformation, which is entirely geometric, it lives in the middle piece of what I just erased, f h1 of t, it actually gets traded off for a piece that's in the sections of in h2 of O. So you expect then the corresponding tangent vector in H1TX is exchanged with an element in H2 of O X dual. So you expect this deformation of the space as a principal bundle to reappear on the other side as a deformation of X dual as an all-star jerk. And more generally, given Y and Z, deformations of X as a principal bundle, you can ask, so you can ask for two gerbs, say alpha Y in H2 X dual all star, and alpha z, So given y, a principal bundle over x, and z, a principal bundle over X dual, you can ask whether these two deformations of X and X dual can be supplemented by gerbs so that they'll match under Fourier Mukai duality and will be deforming the usual Fourier Mukai duality. So we can look for alpha y in H2z with coefficients in O star and alpha z in H2y with coefficients in O star so that the Fourier Mukai duality deforms to, I'm going to write it in terms of twisted sheaves, deforms to a duality of the derived category of twisted sheaves on Y with the derived category of twisted sheaves on Z. So these categories of twisted sheaves are the ones that Andrei Calderaro studied in his thesis, and they are particular pieces in the derived categories of sheaves on the gerbs that are classified by the element alpha y and element alpha z. The problem is that the derived categories of sheaves on the gerbs are actually huge, and they naturally decompose into orthogonal pieces labeled by the characters of the stabilizer group for the gerb, in this case C star, and these are the degree one pieces. And so you can, and they determine all the other pieces. So you can take these essential pieces and you can ask whether, and these are the ones, if you move from the trivial space, thought as a trivial gerb to a non-trivial gerb, the degree one piece of a trivial space is precisely the derived category of the space, whereas the whole derived category of the trivial gerb is much bigger. So these are the categories that really move in a flat family. And so you can ask if you can deform the Fourier Mukai, given two deformations of the spaces, if you can supplement them by gerbs so that they deform, that the Fourier Mukai deforms. And so, actually, it works both ways, but of course, in many cases, the categories of coherent sheaves are really boring. If you really move in a general direction and you take coherent, the categories are very small. You get interesting statements when you hit algebraic deformations. In general, for analytic deformations, you don't get really interesting categories. So I prefer to work with quasi-coherent, but Anton Kapustin always tells me that I should work with coherent because those are the ones that are physically interesting. So, they jump, but they jump in a naive sense. So that's why I didn't want to go into the deformation theory. If you set up your deformation theory of Dg categories correctly, they don't jump because they're homotopies that you can use to contract. So these are really flat families of categories, but for this you need some higher machinery like Joao's quasi categories. I really don't want to go into that. But this is all mostly motivating. But so we can look for those, and I just wanted to say this theorem, which we proved with Rondonaghi, which says that under a very mild assumption, you can actually assert that it's an assumption on Y and Z. So you can't really hope that this will work for arbitrary deformations, but if, so there is a pairing on H1 of the base with coefficients in X times H1 of the base with coefficients in X. This parameterizes X dual. This parameterizes all principal bundles over X. This parameterizes all principal bundles over X dual. There is a pairing that hits H3 with coefficients in O star. And if the classes of Y and Z are orthogonal with respect to that pairing, then alpha y, alpha z, and phi exist. And in fact, it's if and only if, but let me state it this way. It's the Seferovitch group. This is a bundle of groups over S, and I'm moving it all towards us over the bundle of groups. So there is a pairing between the Seferovitch group of X and the Seferovitch group of X dual with values in H3 of the base. And you can match the deformations, complement them with jerps exactly when this pairing vanishes. Okay, so going back to the case of a single torus. So, but you see that already this phenomenon of Fourier Mukai functors exchanging different types of deformations occurs even for families of tori, families of abelian varieties. For a single torus, it doesn't, but for families, it's already there. And for a single torus, actually, it does occur, but then you have to talk about non-commutative deformations, which is what I'm going to get to now. Well, so this, I was going to spend some time to explain how this picture and the picture with the non-commutative tori actually fits as a part of the theory of one motifs, but I don't really have time, so I'm going to skip this entirely. If somebody wants to hear that, you can ask me afterwards. But let me now talk about the non-commutative deformations. So going back to a single torus, a single complex torus, one can look at a Poisson structure, homomorphic Poisson structure lambda on X, and the corresponding element under the Fourier Mukai. By the way, if you write the torus as a vector space modulo a lattice, then the Fourier Mukai transformation that exchanges these two pieces is very easy to write explicitly in terms of the vector space. This is just, these are homomorphic polyvector by vector fields, so they're just given by the second wedge product of the vector space. And this is canonically the same as H2 of X0. And so you get a piece here. I'm going to call it little b. And this is exactly the Fourier Mukai image, the homological Fourier Mukai image, which you can check. I'm sorry? This dual torus, thank you. So you look at these two directions of deformations. And in fact, Anton Kapustin about actually more than a year ago, maybe more than 2 years ago, analyzed pairs of deformations like that from the point of view of the 2,2 sigma model. And he argued that the brain theory corresponding to this deformation should match the brain theory corresponding to this deformation. And so when we started on this project, we were really trying to prove Anton's statement geometrically. So this is a joint work with Oren Ben-Bassat and Jonathan Block. And what we want to prove is we want to show that the ordinary Fourier that there is an equivalence of a deformation of the derived category of coherent shifts on X along lambda with a deformation of the derived category of coherent shifts on X dual along B, which specializes to the usual Fourier mu chi if lambda and B are zero. And we can't quite do that, unfortunately. The reason we can't is because if you want to make sense geometrically of the non-commutative deformation of the torus, you're stuck. There are natural quantizations, deformation quantizations of a complex torus, infinitesimally given by lambdas, but they are only formal. They are not geometrizable. So lambda gives a canonical, in fact, Muyal deformation X lambda of X over the formal disk. So this is just the formal spectrum of the power series in one variable, which should be called H bar always. And so there is a whole space of deformations that have this infinitesimal in general. It's in fact parameterized by the second step in the Hodge filtration on the second Ramp homology of your X. But there is a preferred point in that space, which is given by the Muyal quantization, and that's the one we're going to look at. So there is a preferred way to integrate this infinitesimal deformation to a formal deformation. So this is a formal deformation. Of course, specifying this is the same as specifying a sheaf of algebras on X, where AX is a sheaf of flat C double bracket H algebras with the property that module H, it gives you the structure sheaf. And the infinitesimal is exactly one. And this is how, of course, you think about these deformations, but it's also useful to think about them as, in at least intuitively, as non-commutative spaces over the formal disk. And so one can look at the derived category of quasi-coherent shifts on these guys, which is, by definition, going to be the derived category of quasi-coherent shifts on X that have an AX module structure. And the closed for this is an honest formal deformation of X because over the closed fiber we really get X. There is one closed point in the formal disk, and there we have X. And now the idea is, can we use B to find another formal deformation of X dual over the formal disk, which is equivalent, Fourier mu chi equivalent to this one, and the equivalent specializes on the closed point to the ordinary Fourier mu chi. So we want a dual object X dual, I'm going to put the B on the left because it's going to be a Jerby deformation rather than a non-commutative deformation over D, which again contains over the closed point X dual. And an equivalence from the derived category of X lambda to the derived category of X dual B, which specializes to Fourier mu chi on the closed fiber. Maybe it's worth pointing out here that at least on the infinitesimal level, this is exactly reproducing what Marco Gualtieri was doing today for t-duality of generalized complex or Keller manifolds. This transformation that says bit to lambda is exactly the one that exchanges. So the point is that if you start with a complex manifold, the infinitesimal deformations of this complex manifold as a generalized complex manifold are exactly the second Cox-Shultz homology of X. And the t-duality that Marco was presenting today exactly exchanges lambda with B in this situation. So this is some different geometric model for the t-dualities that he was discussing today. And it has a slightly different flavor because we're doing it in the homomorphic context and we're working with non-commutative spaces versus stacks, whereas he's only working with manifolds and he has interesting geometric structures on them. So this is slightly more restrictive, well, in fact, a lot more restrictive than what he was doing. But in some sense, it's an incarnation of the process he was performing. So, yeah, we would like to get this object, and not surprisingly, this object turns out to be a jerk. So it turns out that this dual object exists, this duality exists on the formal level. And the dual object is an all-star jerk on the formal space X dual cross B. So this is an ordinary commutative formal analytic space. And there is some ordinary geometric all-star jerk on it, which is dual to this non-commutative space. We want to show that there is an equivalence of deformations. So there is a deformation of DBX, which I already defined. X lambda. I'm looking for an XB dual so that there is an equivalence here which specializes to the cross phi. And it turns out that there is such an XB dual, and it is going to be the dual object XB dual. It's an all-star jerk. It's an ordinary all-star jerk on this formal space. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying there is XB dual and there is phi, which specializes to Fourier of chi on the closed fiber. Okay, so to build XB dual and phi, you go in stages, so this is done in steps. So first of all, build XB dual, and the way you build XB dual is you construct it as a quotient stack. Construct XB dual as a quotient stack. So the point is that X dual, of course, if X is V modulo lambda, then X dual is V bar dual modulo lambda dual. And we can use the class E to the H B, which is a class in H2 x dual with coefficients in all double bracket h star. And notice that when h is 0, it specializes to 1. We can use this class to construct an extension, a group extension, of the group bundle lambda dual. So there is a group extension of the group bundle lambda dual by GM on one here on the formal disk. Because, as usual, this is given by a group cocycle of the fundamental group of X dual, which is lambda dual, extended by this. So I get a group extension. These things are just denoting the trivial bundles of groups. So it's just a Heisenberg extension. It's just the usual formula. You have as a bundle, gamma underlined is just the product of lambda underlined with GM over the formal disk, and the product is given by have psi and z. So psi is in lambda dual, z is in GM. Have psi prime and z prime. These two things multiply to psi plus psi prime, z times z prime, e to the hb. So you get this bundle of groups on the formal disk, and you can quotient the trivial bundle of vector spaces over the formal disk. So X dual cross D, this is really the quotient of V bar dual underlined by lambda dual underlined. And X B dual is going to be the quotient as a stack of V dual underlined by gamma underlined, where gamma acts through its homomorphism to lambda. So every point has a stabilizer GM. That's why it's a jerk. So you get this geometric quotient jerk over the trivial, over the product of the dual torus with the formal disk. And now the next step. Do I have time for the next step? Yeah, I have time for the next step. The next step is to prove a geometric result that will identify this jerk with the Jacobian of our non-commutative torus. So identify X B dual, which is a family over D, with a geometrically defined object associated with the non-commutative torus. And so the theorem we prove here says that, well, it has, say, two parts. The relative Picard stack of line bundles on the non-commutative torus along the fibers, which are translation invariant, is an all-star job on the formal space, which is the product of S dual and D, and peak zero X lambda D is actually isomorphic to X dual B, and in fact, as groups. So one thing I didn't explain here because I'm out of time is, so this group is of course non-commutative. It's a nilpotent extension of this lattice by GM. And when you quotient the vector space with bar dual by this group, this, the resulting stack is a group stack. It has a group structure which just comes from the addition on V and the multiplication on the group that acts. It's a group stack, but it's a non-commutative group stack. It's an interesting thing because the moduli space of this jerp is this formal space, which is of course a group over D, and it's an abelian group. But the jerp itself is an ordinary algebraic stack, but it has a non-commutative group structure, which on the moduli space induces a commutative one. And so this has a natural commutative group structure, a non-commutative group structure. This has a natural non-commutative group structure. In fact, well, it has a natural group structure because I can tensor line bundles. Line bundles are bimodules on our non-commutative torus, so I can tensor them. And the tensor product is again non-commutative, and these things are really isomorphic as groups. And the second part is that, which is the first, I mean, it's really how you prove this statement, is that there is a Poincaré shift. There is a universal shift P on the fiber product of the non-commutative torus with the fiber product with the jerp, which specializes to the ordinary Poincaré shift on the closed fiber. And the easiest way to describe this shift is by a factor of automorphy. And yeah, I have time to write the factor of automorphy so that I write something concrete. So P corresponds to a factor of automorphy from lambda cross gamma to the algebra functions of Mouillard quantized functions on V cross V bar dual. And it's given by the formula lambda psi Z evaluated at the point V comma X. And maybe I shouldn't write this here. So the factor of automorphy is the easiest thing you can imagine. So it's this evaluated at Vx. It's equal to z times e to the pi I psi lambda, the imaginary part of psi lambda, e to the pi x lambda plus psi v bar, and e to the pi over 2 psi lambda plus psi lambda bar. This is just the usual formula with an extra z here. And the key observation, which is not a hard observation, is that this formula actually makes sense non-commutatively because all those products and all the exponents that you write here, you should think about them as star products and star exponents, but in fact they're ordinary products and ordinary exponents because these are exponentials of constant linear functions. So there is a Poincaré shift given by this factor of automorphy. It is the universal shift for our moduli problem. That's how you prove that the two moduli stacks are isomorphic. And finally, you can just run Mokai's argument and check that this thing gives an equivalence by checking that the square of this functor is the pullback by minus one on the torus up to a shift by the dimension. So the second theorem is that phi p gives an equivalence. And I think it's a good place to stop.
Any questions, comments?
No, so the issue is, so I didn't stress this very well, but in the results when you're dealing with families, if you start with a family, you deform the family so that you lose the section, you get a gerb on the other side, but you don't get an arbitrary gerb. You get a very special gerb. It's a gerb that's trivial on all the fibers. On the other hand, of course, you can start with a gerb that's trivial on all the fibers and slightly perturb it. It's not going to be trivial on all the fibers. You would like to have a T-dual for that. And what this thing teaches you, so this is exactly the solution to this problem over a point. What this thing teaches you is that when you have a torus with a non-trivial gerb, then the T-dual will have to be a non-commutative torus, which is exactly what Anton explained in his paper. The problem is that it's not really satisfying because for physics, you would really want to have sheaves on the non-commutative torus and sheaves on the gerb. And you know, you would want to be able to evaluate at some value of h, and you can't. It's all formal, yeah. It's all formal.
Yeah. Other questions? Okay, just a reminder, we have a receptionist.
Okay. Much more important than questions.